Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Welcome everybody, we are back. Episode 30, full season. Season 1, The Realm of Heroes and Monsters, Storytime, with your host, me, A.P. Fuchs. So here we are, we did it. Approximately 7.5 months of weekly podcast content, just for you. Storytime stuff, just for you. And by you guys tuning in, it propelled me to keep going and to just, you know, deliver on the stories and tell you some things on the side. And it's been a blast. So thank you so much for tuning in for this first full season. There is a second season coming up. As I mentioned in previous episodes, the plan is we're going to wrap up season one with this episode. And then we're going to take a month break. And then after the month break is over, season two is going to begin. And it's going to be story time, of course. But it's going to be a different format in regards to the show itself. So, and it's going to be more, condensed. But anyway, we'll get into all that stuff for the first episode of season two. But yeah, for right now, I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in. It's a wonderful feeling just to know that you guys were there the whole time and listening to the tales and giving me that, whatever your writer needs, and that is a reader, and in this case, a listener. So thank you. I mean, it's satisfying for me to share the stories with you. So I appreciate it. And, you know, thank you. Just thank you. Thank you. So I thought, you know, for this first little segment, you know how we always like talk, you know, either like superheroes or monsters and that sort of thing. So for this final episode, I thought, you know what, let's do a quick behind the scenes as to this whole superheroes and monsters thing. Like, what is that? Like, you know, like if you look online, like all my stuff is the realm of heroes and monsters, you know, and like, did I purposely put myself in those niches for like a reason, and or are those the only niches I know how to write, or like, what's the story there, right? So it's very simple. The story is that I have a personal fascination with good versus evil. I mean, it was birthed in me, I suppose, a combination of two factors. One is as far back as I can remember, like as my first memories, I was always a superhero fan in general, and Superman was my guy. And so that's that part of it. And then the second part is, I grew up in your standard sort of nuclear family. Christianity is huge in my family. So in of itself is about good versus evil, right? So I'm surrounded now growing up with a love, you know, for the good, of course, the superhero side of things. And then we have the religious element that, you know, in terms of morality and recognizing right from wrong and that sort of thing, right? And of course, you know, when it's important, those are important lessons to teach your kids, right? The difference between right and wrong. So I appreciated that with my parents. But then as I got older and, you know, you start thinking about these things and you start discovering things about yourself, and, you know, we've all been there, right? We've gone on this journey. And, you know, I started looking at this whole good versus evil concept and started, you know, with a more, more mature mind, you know, looking at it objectively and like, what is this really all about? Like, why is there the struggle between good and evil, right? You know, and is it us versus ourselves? Is it us versus others? Is it us versus, you know, unseen forces? Is it, you know, what is it, right? So I started looking into it and, you know, doing my own research and came to my own conclusions regarding it. But the point is, that's where the whole heroes and monsters things come in. Because heroes, of course, represent good. Monsters, 9 times out of 10, represent evil. And I've always been, as a horror type guy, drawn to the monster side of horror, as opposed to your standard horror, you know, creepy story or, you know, that kind of thing. Some sort of unsettling event. Whatever the horror story might be. It was, you know, the monster tales were the ones that drew me. And the reason the monster tales drew me was because I viewed monsters because of the way they look. Like, for example, the werewolf or a zombie or a vampire. They're kind of like, in a way, wearing quote-unquote costumes, right? They have like a distinct physical attribute. You know, the Wolfman, he's all hairy, you know, the zombie, he's all decayed and gross. And like, so they had these sort of like trope looks to them, even though trope's not quite the right word, but you know what I'm getting right at, right? Is just the fact that they had these distinct looks. So, of course, in my childhood mind, well, what would those things be? Well, those would be considered, in my view of superheroes, supervillains. So that's, and even to this day, that's how I approach it, is like, you know, whatever the protagonist is, whether he's human or a superhuman, and he has to go up against monsters, you know, the monsters are always written from that supervillain point of view. Because they are supervillains to a large degree, right? Like, I mean, the werewolf, right? Like, he's super strong, super fierce, you know, agile. He's got the fighting skills, like, the whole bit, right? He's super. You know, vampires, same thing. I mean, depending on the lore, right? They mean they're strong. Sometimes they get vanished. Sometimes they can fly. I mean, again, depending on the lore that you're reading. But, so, anyway, that's how this whole thing came to be, this whole good versus evil concept. And that's the foundation of the show that you're listening to right now. That's the foundation of all my creative work, is good versus evil, heroes versus monsters. And that's where I've just kept going with my artistic career, is pursuing that avenue, and doing that through both nonfiction and fiction means. And fiction, of course, is for you, just for you, reader, just for you, listener, just for you, viewer. You know, and yeah, I wanted to share that whole idea of good versus evil, and that's where the heroes and monsters come in. So that gives you an entire context for like every creative endeavor that I've done. So what we've done here is we've combined both parts of this together, the creative stuff plus the pulp culture elements, so to speak, but we did it in a nonfiction way this episode because I wanted to give you guys some background on it. So anyway, enough of that. Let's get into story time, because we're going to do story number one. That's right, story number one, because there's a second one later. So we're going to do story number one, and then we're going to come back, have a brief chat, and then we're going to get into story number two. And then after that, we'll wrap her all up. So that's the plan, okay? So 3, 2, 1, story. Episode 30. Odd Hunting. Grug lumbered over to the silver tub sitting there in the forest. It was open, some rainwater from the shower just moments ago having gathered within. There was a lid, which he rocked back and forth a little on its hinges. The dark gray clouds above signaled more rain was on its way. He went around the tub, surveying all sides, seeing what else was near it. Nothing other than some grass and fallen leaves. But inside was a hunk of raw meat. Dinner. Thunder crashed overhead and almost immediately it began to downpour. Grug got into the tub for shelter and pulled the lid closed. Its top was transparent, and so he watched as the water splashed against it in a blurry mosaic, showcasing some of the skeletal trees while he ate the meat. A red light flashed within the tub, and a voice said, "Initiating temporal sequence." Immediately after, a purple mist sprayed from tiny nozzles along each side of the tub. It tasted like earthworm mixed with pine. Grug's head swam, and all went dark. He didn't know how much time had passed. Maybe a few seconds, perhaps a few minutes. But when he came to, men covered in connected tiny ringlets of dark gray, stone? With strange pointed head coverings clunked against the tub with six thick sticks with triangular ends.
"Oi, look at this," one of the men said. "There's someone inside."
The other guy came up close and peered in.
"You in there, open up."
Grug banged against the transparent covering with all his might, but couldn't break through. One of the men on the outside smashed against it with that tool of his. A fresh blast of purple mist filled the tub, and Grug went back under. When he awoke, he saw a couple of men in white frilly shirts hitting the outside of the tub with long carved sticks made of wood and... stone again? It didn't look like stone, but he didn't know the word for the long dark gray cylinders coming out of the end of them. Through the barrier, one said, "Hey, you in there,
Open this thing. Look at him, all hairy and matted. What is he? Said the other man. More banging against the tub's hull. Grug banged against the interior of it with his fists and feet, but he couldn't get out. A fresh blast of purple mist put him back under. Grug wasn't sure how much time had passed until he awoke again, this time to three men wearing brown hide from head to toe. They beat on the tub with sticks that had stones crisscrossed with hide, holding the two together. Open, one said. Open. Grug grunted his reply, once more kicking and pounding against the inside of the tub. The thuds from the men's tools echoed within the narrow chamber, each beat of the tools matching the hard thumping of his heart. One of the men on the outside raised his tool good and high above the transparent roof, and Grug was sure it would break through. The thing came crashing down and bounced off. Frustrated and growling, Grug threw himself around inside the chamber, banging himself against all sides in a furious effort to get out. Nothing changed. Trapped. Utterly trapped. Another blast of purple mist, and the next time he awoke, a handful of young men wearing shirts of various colors cut off at the sleeves along with blue pants jumped up and down on top of the tub. Some kicked at it from the outside. Others threw heavy stones at it. Each slam of the stones against the tub made Grug cringe from the off chance one would smash through and hit him. Look at this guy, one of the younger men said. He looks like Chewbacca. Another of the young men laughed. No kidding. What is he? Looks like a caveman to me, another said. Grug hit against the tub's interior again, but his efforts were cut short by more mist. All went black. An indeterminate amount of time passed. When he came to, an older man with gray hair and tidy gray clothes was on the other side of the transparent lid. The man leaned in close and did something with his hand outside of Grug's view. A loud hiss followed, and the lid opened. Easy, friend, the man said, extending a hand to him. Grug didn't take it, and instead just lunged out and tackled the man to the ground. Immediately, harsh vibrations raced through every bone and muscle in his body and everything locked up. He was hauled off the man by two other men and brought to his feet. The man in gray got off the ground, dusted himself off, then stepped up to Grug. The man said, "You've been through quite a journey." The man stepped aside and with an open hand showed what was behind him. A multitude of tall structures with tubs similar to what Grug had just been in, traveling this way and that through the air. Welcome to the year 2142. It's time for you to join the others. Then, with a grin, after all, winter is coming and we don't want to go hungry, and there's nothing quite like a prehistoric steak.
And we're back for the little second segment of this double episode of the finale of season one of The Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime with AP Fuchs. So welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the previous story that you just listened to. And we've got some more coming up right away. But I wanted to give a quick now, this is the reason why I'm including the story to come is because this is going a throwback, way back. We're talking, I would say, roughly 20-ish years or so ago. This story was constructed by my pen name, Peter Fox. Peter Fox at the time, because A.P. Fuchs wrote horror, and I wrote a love story. But as it was at the time, and even now, if you're doing something sort of really outside your genre, typically you go under a pen name. That's just sort of a way to kind of divide the two. Identities, so to speak, so people don't pick up, for example, like an A.P. Fuchs book and expect like a monster story or a superhero story, and they get up something totally different, right? So that was one way to sort of divide it. But instead, at first I thought about keeping it a secret, the pen name, the undercover pen name, like Stephen King did with Richard Bachman, until it got sales sucked. They basically told everybody, and then of course sales skyrocketed. But yeah, because the Bachman books, when they first came out, they totally failed completely. Even though they're wonderful, wonderful stories, hard to read sometimes because of the content, but they are still good stories. And anyway, the point is, I thought about going the secret route, you know, like undercover, so to speak. But then I thought, no, I'll tell people about it, you know, so I did. And so that's what we're going to hear is we're going to hear a Peter Fox story. And what separates that work is the fact that it's done with a different type of voice. You know, every writer, every artist, every singer, any form of craftsman, you know, they start off learning the craft of whatever it is they're pursuing, and they typically, not always, but typically mimic, you know, those who came before, right? Like, you know, writers are known for like mimicking the style of the books that they're currently reading. And this is, I'm talking when the writers like first starting their writing career, you know, even artists, you know, like they have their favorite comic artists, for example, and you know, that's kind of how they practice their craft, is learning based upon that other artist's work. And that's great for, you know, ground zero and learning and establishing sort of the basics and that sort of thing. That's important. And then, but after that, then what ends up happening is you end up inevitably finding your own voice, finding your own style, finding your own way, your own, you know, stuff. So that when people, you know, look at a piece of art or they read a story, they're like, yeah, you know, this is a Fuchs story, or yeah, you know, this is a, let's say, Jim Lee piece of art, you know, or that kind of thing, right? So you end up finding your voice. And what's interesting regarding the story that we're about to hear is the Peter Fox stories have a different voice than my voice, you know, the stuff that I normally give, right? Like, I was talking in another episode how, like, my voice in Monster Fiction is different than my voice in my Axiom Man fiction. You could tell when you're reading an Axiom Man book that is told differently. It happens by default, just the way my brain works. But I mean, you could replace the name Axiom Man with like any other character, just for example, but there'll still be a different tone to the story. So that being said, the Peter Fox story that you're about to hear, different tone, different voice, but I wanted to share it with you because it's a personal story. And two, I think, you know, to wrap up the season, I wanted to share a story about something that most people listening to this podcast would have dealt with at some point in their lives. And I think it's important, you know, as an arts community, as a entertainment community, as a consumer of entertainment community, that we kind of find common ground in different areas of life, because no one's getting out of here alive, right? We're all set for a one day appointment with a certain somebody, you know. So, like, either way, we're in this together. So I hope the following to come will be a way just to share that, hey, I'm with you too. Let's do life together. We're on the same team. So let's get it done. So here it comes. And you'll see. Episode 30.5, My Angel and Me, by Peter Fox. There was a time when I believed in angels, and there was a time when I knew one intimately. I'm not a preacher or a Baptist son, but only a regular guy who, nearly 6 years ago, caught a glimpse of heaven. Her name was Cyan. I knew her my whole life, in my heart, in my mind. I never actually met her, though, until I was in high school. Here's how it began and how it ended. In May 1998, I was lying in bed, feeling incredibly lonely and aching to have somebody near. As I lay there in the darkness, I prayed to God that I would meet someone, anyone, just someone. I told him all that I wished for my angel to be, everything from the tenderness of her heart to the superficial stuff on the outside. I was specific. I must have listed at least 30 things, if not more. And not generic things, mind you, like I want her to be nice or I want her to be funny. No, it was stuff like, I want her to smile because it's raining outside. And I wanted to understand how life isn't about what we do, but about who we are when no one's looking, that secret part of ourselves that no one knows. A week or so later, I met Cyan, the embodiment of what I prayed for, right down to her favorite number, 7,
and favorite color, blue. And not just any blue, Superman blue. When I first laid eyes on her as I walked the school halls, I remember feeling the strength run from my body, my legs feeling like wet noodles, and, as comedic as it was, my jaw hanging open as she neared. Something about this girl hit me. Time stilled, and I was no longer me, but just a little boy, yearning to be held by her, someone distant from what I could be called the conscious realm. Then the world picked up again, and I walked by her, trying to catch my breath, too shy to say anything or even nod in her direction. I saw Cyan now and then in the halls, and each time, I was hers. Once, she waved to me, and that smile of hers? Man, you had to be there. It would make you think the greatest joy you had ever known was nothing more than a bad memory in comparison. That moment would play in my mind throughout the entire day. The following month, a friend of mine, David, had a graduation party at his house just outside the city. What I didn't know was that David was friends with Cyan, so you can imagine my reaction when I came down the stairs into his basement and there she was, sitting on the couch, talking to another girl. Cyan and I talked a lot that night, all the while my heart was racing, my mind trying to wrap itself around her. Those items I asked the good Lord for? She had all of them. I'm not kidding. She had every single one. And, man, she was beautiful. All I had pictured my forever sweetheart to be. The same girl I saw in my mind when I stared at her to like girls. The girl I was going to spend the rest of my life with. She was small, only 16 at the time, with smooth cheeks and long, wavy brown hair, smelling of something that reminded me of strawberries and vanilla. We went for a walk that evening, a far ways down my friend's street. I don't remember what we talked about, but I'm sure it was more getting to know you stuff. And when the night was over, she gave me her phone number and email address. A week later, I finally mustered up the courage to email her. She later told me that she had hoped I'd contact her right away, but after a few days went by, she was sad because I hadn't called or emailed. I apologized and told her I was scared. And before you knew it, we had our first date and our first kiss. I remember sitting in my car in her driveway, dropping her off after our first outing. We went to the comic shop, Cadolan Park, the Forks, and yet another park, just walking and talking and climbing trees. Just getting to know each other, know the stuff, the little things that make us who we are. Our quirks, the inflections we place on certain words, how we move, how our eyes light up just after we're about to say something exciting. Then, in the driveway, she asked if she can give me a kiss. I said yes, and the rest, as they say, is history. We celebrated Thanksgiving together, my birthday, Christmas, New Year's. I loved her so much, and she felt the same. There was this one time in December, on the 1st, actually, when I got up before 6 a.m. to deliver the morning paper. I had a paper route at the time. And there on the front step was a package before me, a decorated shoebox. I recognized her handwriting immediately and the drawings she had done on the box's lid. I went back inside and took the box to my room. Upon opening it, I was greeted by the sweet smell of strawberries and vanilla wafting up from the light blue fabric within. Cyan had put some of her perfume on it. I took the fabric out and, it having turned out to be a pillowcase, opened it to see what was inside. It was a tape recorder, and on the play button was a little piece of paper that read, "Play me." And I did. On that tape, my Cyan poured out her love for me, told me how much our being together meant to her, how it had changed her life. To this day, I could still hear and feel her words, especially when she said, "I promise to love you from now until the end of eternity." Once the tape was finished, a song came on. It was about Jesus' love for humanity and how he would do anything to be with us. Cyan later revealed that the song stood for how she felt about me, how she would do anything to ensure we'd always be together. She was my angel. At the beginning of January, following our first and only New Year's, she and I became intimate with one another. She was the first girl I ever made love to, and even now I do not regret giving myself to her. Then, as much as our expressions of love meant to each other, as much as how pure our uniting was, something happened. Something neither of us expected. We broke up. We had to. Her parents, and mine, found out we were sleeping together. This soon led to late-night talks with my folks, arguments, me trying to fathom how they couldn't understand that I love Cyan. My angel had it rough at home, too. Because she was with me, it was making her home life difficult. Her parents wanted us apart. We had a long talk one night, she and I, roughly 2 weeks after losing ourselves to and in each other. And the next morning, she and I broke up. We parted in tears, completely broken and down inside. It was a relief when, shortly after, a few days maybe, I can't remember, she and I decided to fight for us. We did it by getting back together. Our parents fought back, four against two. We were young. We had no place to go and no one to turn to other than each other. In the end, after a period of breaking up and getting back together, trying so hard to make it work, we said goodbye for the final time. These days, when I'm not writing, I think about her. Most of my poetry is about her. Nearly every night I dream about her, and when we're together in my dreams, I'm so happy. Happy, actually, isn't even a big enough word to describe it. When I'm with Cyan in my dreams, I'm at peace. My heart, still aching from losing her those many years ago, is finally at rest. Then I wake up and want to die because my angel isn't with me. I've tried to kill myself, the pain of our separation being too much for me. Something broke inside when we parted. A nervous breakdown, some might say. I was admitted to hospital and put on medication. I still take the pills today. My body's chemistry isn't right anymore. I also found out it was never right to begin with. I've always been predisposed to sadness and fear of loss. My psychiatrist calls this depression. And he's right. I am depressed. I still think of death more often than I should. More often than anyone should, for that matter. But I'll stick around, because you never know. My prayer, the one I prayed continuously for years, the one begging God to bring her back, to send her down to me again, might still be answered. Well, thank you for tuning in to this double episode of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime with AP Fuchs. This is the end of season one, 30 full episodes. I say it again, 30. Like, that's a good number. That's like, if you did it one a day, that's like a month. You know what I mean? That's pretty good, you know? I mean, it would take you maybe, what, a day and a little bit to do it if you did it 24 hours consecutively. So 30 hours total. Well, the shows aren't that long, so you could probably wrap it up in, what, 12? But next season, the shows are going to be longer. Why? Because the stories are going to be longer. But again, we're going to get all into that when we get into the first episode of season two and talk about what's to come. And I have a plan for that first episode of what we're going to do that's going to set it apart from the remainder of the season. But again, we're all going to get into that at that time. I don't want to give too much away. I want you guys to sort of wait in anticipation and all the rest of it. So let's do that. Okay, so I'm going to leave you guys. I'm going to say thanks again for tuning in for an entire full season of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime. And I'm so excited to get started on season two. But, well, we got to do some recording, I suppose. Get that going for you. So that's going to be the aim for the next while we have some downtime. And then, like I said, we're going to come back in a month and we're going to get right into season two with more stories of heroes and monsters. So be sure to subscribe to this channel. Be sure to subscribe to this, whatever way you're listening to this through Spotify or whatnot. And whatever the subscribe button is, find it, click it, use it, because you got to be ready, because in a month, season two. See you then.
What? You stuck around till after the credits? You knew that that was what we do here? All right, well, here we are. Okay, so this is going to be really quick, and this is a behind-the-scenes thing on just quickly how these episodes are done. What I do is, and this makes it easier for me, is I'll, you know, whatever stories we're going to be reading, I'll actually record the stories first. I don't do, like, a show, record a story, you know, do more show, and that's it. No. I do a binge read, so to speak, and record a pile of me reading first, and then later come back and then do the surrounding show bits and then assemble it all together at the end. That's why if you're watching this on YouTube, for example, you know, in the watch listen version of the podcast, you'll notice that, you know, during the show segments, I'll be wearing like one shirt, and then during the reading segments, I'll be wearing like completely different clothes. And that's because I recorded the stories on a different day than the actual show. So anyway, that's the behind the scenes things on how this season was constructed. And again, I hope you enjoyed season one of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters podcast. And I look forward to seeing you again in season two. So stay tuned, tune in. Next time for season 2, episode 1. Subscribe.